Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
Give me a mountain with lots to do. Give me the sunshine, give me a dew. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good friends, give me a dew.
Grab some friends and an ice-cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew!
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
Welcome to part two of our conversation with John Paul Newland.
For me, I mean, this was the third time it happened to me. Mm-hmm. The day before, that same day, we went and did an investigation up at Ravenscar. And we went to the old RAF artillery satellite site where we're doing this investigation inside one of these buildings, and we're talking to soldiers, British soldiers. Now, myself and Mickey both served in the forces, and Daniel, who I had, who's one of our cameraman researchers, pulls out a British cap badge, puts it on the side, K2s, everything going off. Mickey turns around and says to me, JP, they think we're German. Oh, what? He said, they think we're German. They're telling us to get down. Because obviously, Mickey being a medium, mm-hmm. he can see it all and communicate with them all. And then Daniel pulled out a German cap badge. And the next thing I know, I'm on the floor. I've been physically stabbed, what felt like a bayonet going into my chest. The pain, I can't.
Yeah.
Describe the pain to anybody, but what I can tell you is, if people don't know what you're dealing with or how to deal with these things, please don't do it. I was with somebody who could protect me. My life, I always put my life in my hands with this gentleman, always will do. I don't have an issue with it. But I felt I'd been stabbed and I'd been shot. And it wasn't terrifying for me. I was just gobsmacked. But when Mickey explained it, when we went out after recording, he turned around and said to us, they're still fighting a war. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? Well, it's basically on Scarborough's coast. And Scarborough got bombed really badly in World War II with the Germans. And this is literally on the cliffs. And this site is literally flattened, apart from four buildings. Mm-hmm. Mickey stated that they are still thinking they're still fighting a war because they know no different. They were killed as soldiers. They were killed in war. They still see there is a war going on.
Now, what is that when that's going on? Is that a residual thing, or are these conscious entities that are literally thinking this is still going on, almost like Groundhog's Day or a nightmare that you can't get out of?
I honestly think it's like Groundhog Day. I think they still live.
Yeah.
As if, you know, as far as they're concerned, they die as a soldier. You are a soldier.
Yeah.
So on the coast, I would assume that there was Germans and that shot down anywhere near there. I would assume they're still thinking that their daily life is they're fighting the war because they know no different.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. When you cross over, how many spirits do you honestly think know they've passed?
I don't know. I mean, it probably just depends on the situation and how one goes.
Exactly. I mean, if your life's taken really quickly, you're not going to know, are you?
No.
Well, that place got bombed.
Yeah.
I don't think they know, if I'm honest, and they just do what they do best, and that is protect.
Sure.
I mean, I have met quite a few spirits like that mm-hmm. who have, you know, passed suddenly and not realised they've gone. I mean, like Mickey said, outside our house, it's people know they've passed but don't want to accept it. There's others there who don't understand how it's happened. There's disgruntled spirits. And then there's people who just don't think they're dead. And I struggle with that sometimes because how can a person not know they've passed? It's really weird.
It is. I mean, and that's, I guess, one of the mysteries to me is, do they not know they've passed, or have they? Are they realizing that they've passed, but they just don't know what the hell to do next? Where it's like, okay, I'm over here. I realize I'm probably dead, but where's the light? Where's the this? Where's the that that I've heard about? It's like, I'm still here. Like, everything still looks the same, but you can't see me.
It's weird because when I speak to Mickey about it, and I speak to Mickey about this sort of thing a lot, and he does tell me, JP, this is when you pass, that's it. Well, what do you mean? He goes, well, obviously, being a minister, there is a heaven and hell. I go, so I get that because the demons and, you know, spirits can be sent on. But unless they're sent on, they're stuck here. So if people don't know they've passed, they're going to be stuck here. If you died violently, you're stuck here. I mean, Willingham Woods, the POW camp, there's a, we've had some cracking results off a young lady up there. I took Mickey up there for the first time. I didn't realise. We got it on video and everything. Mickey's doing a live feed with his public, and I'm doing something else. I'm about 2 foot away from him. We've walked around an old bridge where the POW bit is, where the outskirts of the actual fence is. And all of a sudden, Mickey gets choked. And you can see his scarf's tightening, but nothing's there.
Oh, my gosh.
So Mickey can also feel everything, see it as well as I did. And this is, for me, I was like, what do I do? What do I do? I have no idea. He goes, it's fine. She's trying to tell me how she died. I'm like, okay, so what happened? While she was in the camp, she was brutally raped and murdered, and they slit her throat. And they put Mickey, and she walked Mickey about 40 meters, hanging onto his throat, choking him. And I was like that. And I said to him, what's happening? Because there's a young girl here. She was brutally raped and murdered. They slit her throat. There's about 8 or 9 guys. And we're like, and I'm like that. What? He said, yeah, it's about 8 or 9 people done this to her. Now, we did another investigation only 2 weeks ago. And this is a hard one to take in. There was a fresh reef laid in the woods. We've approached it thinking, okay, so somebody's passed here. It's just a symbol sort of thing. It wasn't a symbol. Apparently, a young girl was murdered there a few months beforehand, 6-7 months beforehand, and that's where she was murdered. Now, again, this girl pointed out both her killers. But we can't go to, we can't work with the police like you can with American. Our British police see us as, if you know stuff, then you're basically a, how can I put it, possible suspect. So for us to relay information to the British police and say, look, this is what we've picked up on, they'll look at us and go, well, you've got to be part of it.
Sure.
But this young girl, she was 7-year-old. We're all stood there. There's K2s, REM pods, EMFs, videos even going mental. And this Mickey's on his hands and knees by this reef in tears as this little girl is clinging on to him for dear life, not wanting him to go, because these two guys, one of them was her uncle, had pulled her into the woods and killed her.
God.
And you watch Mickey go through the whole thing.
Yeah.
For me, it's hard because Mickey's like a dad to me, and I do anything to protect him. But at this point, I didn't know who to protect. My emotions, and I think several other emotions of my team members, because I had, we were actually training. I took 4 new members out for training, and they'd never seen nothing like this. And they all just stood there and looked. And you can see tears in everyone's eyes. This girl, this little girl, did not want Mickey to go. And she made it clear, to the point she was on his back, that we couldn't move him. He was in so much pain. He said her hands were so gripped around his neck to stop him leaving. It just completely disabled him. He said, what I'll do is I'll bless the ground and I'll send her on. And he sent her on. But he said that has got to be one of the top 5 most hardest things he's ever done in his life. And it's the first time I've actually seen or felt emotionally for me, because being what I do, obviously, and what I've experienced, death to me is second nature. I don't have feelings or emotions for it. But seven-year-old child affected me.
Yeah.
The whole night, it affected the whole team. And when I got back, I said to the team, look, guys, you have to understand, this is what it is to be an investigator. This is what it's like to do things. You have to understand you are going to experience this sort of thing. It is hard to deal with, but you have to carry on. But this is what we try to show others. We try to comfort people who are living to see that, you know, these things do happen. I mean, take, I don't know. I mean, we're on a high profile case at the moment. I can't even mention that's in America at the moment, dealing with a missing child. But like I said to Mickey, I heard that, the voice in the mother of that missing child. And I said to Mickey, you know, how comforting would it be just to let them know, you know, how their daughter passed, who was involved? You know, because a lot of people, let's be honest, when somebody gets murdered or out the blue and we don't know who it is, the first thing parents want to know is who.
Yeah.
Are they safe? You know, are they okay? Do they know I'm here? Mm-hmm. I mean, Mickey's got his mum around him. It's funny because I've actually got different people around me. I've got my grandfather, which is normal for me. But I have an ex-partner's husband who was killed in Iraq. Now, he was in the bomb disposal unit, and his dog stepped on an IED, and it killed them both. But I have her partner with me at all times, and every so often I feel the little tap on my neck, mm-hmm. and Mickey says it's him to let you know, saying, look, mate, things are okay. You're doing good. We're proud of you. Now, I don't have a lot of that in my family, because in my family it's all you have to be – like good grades, you have to be really high up in the world with jobs and that. Sure. But to have somebody like that there, just to let you know, I mean, my father's never done it. He's like me, completely emotionless. I mean, I've seen my dad cry twice in my 14, 16 years that I've known him or seen him, mm-hmm. you know? So, but yeah, this little girl took it out of me, and I woke, you know, I thought about it long and hard, and I look at people and think, how comforting would it be to let this mum and dad know that, you know, this is what's happened. This is how it is. She's okay now. She's gone on. But here, it's so frowned against with the British police. I mean, there's so many murders here that could be solved with the help of mediums and psychics that are unsolved. Now, so many big ones as well, but nobody cares. They just, as soon as you say something here, it's ridiculous. There's a lot of pressure within our field in the UK. Yet there's so many teams, and sure. It doesn't matter what you show people or what it is or how you try mm-hmm. to help them. I mean, you could go to a parent and say, look, behind the police and say, look, I'm a medium. I know about your daughter or your son, mm-hmm. this is what happened, this is who we think it is.
Yeah.
They go to the police and they're like, where the hell did you get that from? And then we get, as a team, all pulled in, interviewed, and we'll either get thrown in the nut house or in jail because we're a possible suspect.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with John Paul Newland. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program and sharing his experiences with us. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.